Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Snapshot, episode 65. I'm Brendan Patrick, joined always by Marvel Snap phenom, Cam Best. Cam, your week in Marvel Snap, sir.
Pretty solid week in Marvel Snap, I gotta say. After I took a bunch of time off last week, I've just been, like, sitting or hovering around 100 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been pretty fun for me, because what seems to be happening is, like, now that I'm not, like, Omega trying to climb, the game is like, no, you got to climb, dude. Trust me, trust me, trust me, trust me. So I went on, like, you know, I had like a 13-4 streak with discard. I had like a 20-3 streak with destroy. And it's just like, OK, I guess the secret to, like, having insane win rates is not really being too invested. All right, cool. And that's sort of how my week's been. It's just been like, man, this stuff is really, really crushing. I think, you know, people are going to want to hear my opinion on Thanos. And yeah, I'd be happy to see it nerfed again. But I honestly do think people are overreacting just a little bit. Like, oh, it's still the best deck by so much. God, I'm going to be honest. I really don't know that it is. I think that there's just a lot of players who are really used to playing Thanos, and it didn't get nerfed enough to knock those players off of Thanos. And a lot of those players are the best players in the game. And I tend to think people are overreacting a little bit, because you know what this meta actually is like the best meta for you to play, like, whatever terrible Wong deck you've always wanted to play. It's and not you, Brendan, but like you person who has a favorite bad Wong deck. This is the time.
Yeah, I would say my week was pretty much the opposite experience, where I didn't put a lot of effort or care into something, and I didn't perform well as a result of it, but that is how Flesh and Blood goes. I came back from the Pro Tour here in Los Angeles. I did pretty well in the Constructed format, but I bombed my draft. I do absolutely despise Flesh and Blood drafts, mostly from a competitive perspective. Casually, I think it can be pretty fun. Competitively, it's tough, because it differs from Magic draft in the sense that a lot of the cards you draft really, really matter, and the margins for error in terms of, like, waffling between a class or a different, because they can't, the cards are not playable in, like, multiple classes, is very small. So you can't even, like, wheel the pack and be like, oh, I should pivot. And if you do, you're usually fucked anyway, which is what happened to me, TLDR. But yeah, basically, you're very much incentivized in Flesh and Blood to pick something early, stay in your lane, force, send the signal, and I hate that draft experience. But for me, I was in a pod. I get a pack. Flesh and Blood does not have bombs. It does not have bombs, and mythics are often lower powered than the commons. I open the only bomb in the set, pack one, pick one, and the narrative starts, you know, the music starts going. But I'm on top of the stage, Pro Tour champion, Brendan Patrick, here we come, and I'm like, okay, I'm in.
First tournament back, crushing, right?
Yep, and then my entire pod, and I was like, and I have to force Brute to do this, and then my entire pod to the right of me proceeds to force the living shit out of Brute, and I'm like, oh my god, for the first time in 2 years, I need to pivot to a different class in this pod. So I have to do like a pick 7, pick 8 pivot to Guardian. I'm the one Guardian of the pod, which is good. Everybody in my pod post the draft realizes that I'm the solo Guardian. They all think that they're going to lose, but they don't realize that my deck is also trash because I had the pivot. So I had a 31 card deck, which is not ideal in that kind of format. Flesh and Blood, like, it's, I won't go into it too deeply, but like deck damage, attrition, fatigue, like all these concepts are very important while playing a game like Limited. So you'd actually rather have like 35 to 38 to 37 playable cards.
You've already gone deeper than I understand.
Yeah.
You lost me at Brute.
Yeah, exactly. But basically my deck sucks. So I bombed my draft. Okay. And I did pretty well in CC. I really, in the Constructed format, I enjoyed playing Constructed. I was playing the combo deck that I really, really enjoy. The combo deck that does cool.
I'm shocked.
Yep. The cool combo deck that does cool things is played by cool people. You know how it is.
Is this Kano?
Yeah. I had a great time playing Kano. I love Kano. Okay. Kano also put one player into the top 8 of the Pro Tour, put one player into the top 8 of the Day 2 tournament, the Calling. It's like a tier 3 tournament, and one player into the top 8 of the Eternal format tournament that happened on Sunday. So,
and you were all 3 of those players.
Could have been, but you know, I had to tap the homies and let them get some.
Yeah. You had to ship the tech, and sometimes you give someone a deck and they just do better with it than you. Yeah, I get it.
Ultimately, dude, I actually had more fun than I expected. I think mostly because I played that deck, but the experience at those kind of events is really fun. Like, it was just, the whole scene was electric, the whole atmosphere was electric. So I enjoyed it. But
yeah, there was apparently like a play in the top eight that involved someone Helix. Top decking a one outer.
Yeah, Lisan Al Gaib. That's the that's what they call this. I can't remember the French player's name, but everybody's photoshopping him and they're putting like him in a Fremen suit with the blue eyes and they call him Lisan Al Gaib. Because yeah, basically if you've ever seen the famous Magic play where Lightning's Helix is top decked as the only out, he does that with the equivalent in Flesh and Blood.
Yeah, like I looked at the card and I was like, I don't understand what this card does.
Basically,
that's the thing that came away from that. It was like, is it gain three life? That's what it is?
Yeah, it's like healing salve or whatever. It's like gain three life, instant speed.
And that won him the game?
Yep, because the opponent's attack had dominate, which meant he could only defend with one card from hand. So he could not cover it up and he was at one health and he had the top deck the sigil. So he top decked it not during the draw phase. It was via a effect. So he played something that's called defense reaction. He played it and part of that text is if you play this, you can put a card from your hand on the bottom of your deck if you do draw a card. And he did
right,
that.
So he cantripped into it.
Yeah, he cantripped into it.
Okay.
Exactly. And then Lisan Al Gaib.
That's a crazy game where healing salve can be like a pro tour winning card.
So the only reason is because his opponent did not have a way to interact with his arcane damage, basically. So he has a facet of his deck or one card of his deck.
Every time you introduce a new piece of terminology, I'm just like,
basically, sure. He has a facet of his deck that the opponent can't interact with, like it's uninteractable damage. The opponent could have cards in their deck that could do that, but they've chosen not to because it is minimal damage. So as a result of going up through life and surviving another turn cycle, the opponent is dead because both players were at one. So again, it is as is written, Lisan Al Gaib.
Okay.
Let's hit these at the A's. Everybody's like, dude, the comments, by the way, they were insane. We had like over 100, maybe even over 150 comments. And I think 100 of them were, this is my favorite X podcast. And it got
This is my favorite podcast where they joke about being my favorite podcast.
Yeah. All right. OTAs. Let's just go through them and then we can kind of group together all of the, what are those guys called? Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, oh man, I'm gonna get some flack for that because I forgot that for a sec. Anyway, first one here is Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel moves from a 4/4 to a 4/5.
That is my entire statement.
Yeah, seems. I mean, it's an upgrade, so we'll see in the future.
Shout out to Cerebro 5.
Yeah,
you did it
again. Cerebro 5 knocking on the door, Mr. Adam Warlock 5/4 to 5/5.
Oof, Cerebro 5 knocking on that door, baby. Nah, I think one thing that got massively overlooked and people are hyping Cerebro 5 is it lost its best card a couple months ago, Ms. Marvel. And it's hard to recover from that when you're a deck that already kind of sucks. All due respect to the Cerebro 5 gamers.
Yeah. Psylocke 2/2 to 2/1.
People shit on this, and they're wrong, and I'm right. This is a great nerf. People are like, oh, why would you nerf Psylocke? Well, if you look at numbers, she was one of the best cards in the deck. And that is true both according to stuff Glenn Jones has said about their internal numbers and also just, you know, on untapped.gg. And she was only played in Thanos. And I don't know if they're ever going to like, I don't know. I don't know if this played into it or if it did, if they'll ever admit it or any of that stuff. But if you bring me two cards to nerf, all else held equal, they're the same. I would much rather nerf the Series 3 card than the one people paid money for.
Yeah.
So if you come to me and you're like, I've got a Thanos nerf that doesn't nerf the card we're currently selling, I think I would listen to that person. That's sort of where my head would be at. No, the Psylocke nerf is smart because it A, brings it down to the level of the other two drops that you play, and B, I think you're probably a lot of the time still priced into playing it, which means it's just a free power you get to take off.
All right, Apocalypse 6/8 to 6/6.
I don't get this one. I agree, discard needed a nerf. Hold on. I actually want to start a different spot here. Mm-hmm. This is, I've gotten this comment, I've seen people talk about it. They're like, people are saying, like, you know, Glenn, why did you nerf discard by nerfing Apocalypse instead of Hela? I just wanted to get out ahead of that. Those are not the same deck. It might be easy for you to understand that they're both discard decks, yes, but when I talk about Hela, that's the archetype Hela. When mm-hmm. I talk about discard, overwhelmingly, I'm referring to Apocalypse discard. And drawing that distinction, helps us to better illuminate why that deck needed a nerf, which is it was the only other good deck. And if you're nerfing the best deck, you need to hit the second best deck, especially if it's so far ahead of everything else the way discard was. Issue is I don't really think this meaningfully hit discard. I think it's still pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement with you. It felt a little powerful, so I'm happy to see how a two-power nerf plays out over the next few weeks to a month or so. So seems good to me. Next one is Thanos. Mindstone changes from a 1-1 to a 2-1 entire energy.
It's meaningful, but it's not meaningful enough to outweigh a 0-9, which is, I think, the trap a lot of these Thanos nerfs are getting caught in, right? Where it's like, it's not exactly appreciating just how good Mockingbird is in the deck. To like you can hit this stuff around the margins, and I think in basically every other context of Thanos, it would have gone away by now. But you gave it a 0-9.
Mm.
And so now you need to hit it enough that that 0-9 is not good there, right? And that's a big ask.
Yeah, I think if this nerf came at any other time in Thanos' life cycle prior to Mockingbird, I would have been big sad, to say the least.
Yeah, like, this is like, they're like, this is what I'm talking about, where I'm like kind of worried they're going to over nerf Thanos, right? Because in order to get effectively a free 9 power out of the deck, like that's what they're trying to do with these nerfs, is counterbalance a free 9 power. That's a hard, hard thing to do. I shudder to think what they have in the can. They must have some stuff that's just like, oh boy, I do not want to know what they're going to do to him next, because they're probably going to do something to him.
Yeah. I mean, it's only so long until he becomes like the next Kitty Pryde or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
For the Guardians of the Galaxy, do you want to talk about them in aggregate, or do you have some you want to pick and choose?
I'm fine talking about them however you want to talk about them.
Just group them together. Exactly. So not a particularly meaningful change. Anything get you excited? Like any specific one?
Star-Lord.
So Star-Lord changed from a 2-2. Same
Rocket.
Yeah. Same stat line, 2-2, but now it gets plus 4 power instead of plus 3. And Rocket Raccoon is now a 1-1 instead of a 1-2 and gets plus 4 power instead of plus 2.
It's good numbers. A 1-5 and a 2-6. There are decks that are kind of interested in that. It's a shame we're never going to get to see them as long as it's not just Thanos doing this. It's just like the metagame is very built to do very good stuff right now. And it's hard for you to sell me on this 1-5 is going to matter. When there's, you know, free 0-9s, Phoenix Force generally, the whole deck discard. Like, there's just a lot of stuff that goes pretty tall in ways that I find it hard to believe that a 1-5 is relevant against. And this also applies to the 2-6. It's just the 2-6 may have a little bit more of a home in some sort of Thor control type deck that's built to be Sarah without losing to Mobius. You could talk me into the 2-6 there, I think, pretty readily.
Mm-hmm. For sure. All right, Cannonball. Cannonball releases the new card. It's a 5-8. It says, on reveal, move the highest power enemy card here. Move the highest power enemy card here away. Sorry, I put a comma there. If you can't, destroy it with a rock.
He's fine. Like, I think Cannonball's issue is one of competition. And I think there's just a lot of, like I wouldn't be shocked if Cannonball ends up like the junk version of Jane Foster.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's just like, you only really play it here, but if you want to play the archetype, you have to play it, right? And it's hard to weigh how good getting one of those is. Like, the top end of an example of that would be, like, MODOK, right? But MODOK only really became this, like, you have to get it because this deck is really good after A, Proxima, B, Corvus, C, Meek, to some degree, right? And a Helicarrier rework. And so, like, yeah, if Junk gets that level of support, I could see Cannonball being a really important thing to pick up. It's just, I don't know if we're there. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. All right, on to the Bend and Snap. This is our listener question section. We did ask for a lot of questions specifically in this episode because I was going to be away. We got an absolute shitload, which is great. We really appreciate that. I am once again going to ask you for questions for next week because we are planning to have Glenn on. Haven't circled back with him yet, but we do have that date booked, so I'm assuming it's going to happen. So if you have questions for Glenn, the lead game designer of Marvel Snap, put him in the YouTube comments.
I don't think that's his title. He's like the lead balance guy.
Lead balance guy? Interesting. It is changed. Maybe
he's a senior game designer. I don't know.
I thought he was the lead.
I worry that we'd be inaccurate by calling him lead game designer. I feel like that's a different thing. But like,
it could be. Maybe? So the difference could be like, yeah. The ones I can get mixed up are like design developer, but I do remember looking it up last time when I wrote it in the title.
Okay.
And I asked
lead game designer, Marvel Snap, Glenn Jones.
CEO. No, I'm kidding. All right. Yeah. Shoot us your questions there. And yeah, any burning questions that are appropriate, and keep them tame, please, because he is a guest. So try to be nice. And if you want to get something seriously answered, shoot it in the comments below. We got it queued up. All right. Ben and Snap. First one. Oh, first, I just want to say we had a bunch of comments about Dune Imperium. I did get the expansions. I did. So the problem that I had with the game was basically like the draft would stagnate because card gamers realized that adding a card to your deck is bad unless the card is obscenely broken. They did kind of fix that in like one of the expansions, and there is like some sort of like ad hoc rule people have added on. But yeah, I had a great time. Honestly, I wasted a lot of my Pro Tour testing playing Dune Imperium, and it was great. It was well spent. All right. Next one is from Zegram. They say Agency Simps is now added to my lexicon, along with favorable outcome, please, when talking about card games. Still haven't sent you that meme, but I will.
You haven't.
It's going to come. It's going to come eventually.
Disrespectful, really.
I did. I was with Simon Nielsen this past weekend, who is the originator.
The agency simp.
Yeah, originator of agency simps. All right, next one from Slippy. They say, I was contemplating cleaning my dishes when Cam said, if you've got time to lean, you've got time to clean. I ended up laughing so hard I choked on my food. The dishes were clean that day.
It sucks. It sucked that that works on. It sucks that that worked on you. I hate that shit so much. If you're ever an employer and you say that shit, you should sell your business.
It's just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. If you got time to lean, you got time to clean. Next one's from Wildfire. They say, for the mailbag episode, how much sooner do content creators get the official OTA patches? And what is your favorite wrestler of all time?
I am, not only am I not allowed to disclose that information, I don't even know if I'm allowed to confirm or deny that content creators get any access to that. So as far as I know, I get it the same time you do. Favorite wrestler was the second part of that?
Yeah.
Of all time or of right now?
I think all time. All time.
Ugh, I mean, I don't want to say it because he's like a sex pervert, but Ric Flair.
Really? I didn't know that little tidbit, but
yeah. Oh, you didn't know? Okay, like, isn't that just like the most believable thing you've ever heard, though? Like, you're like, yeah, Ric Flair, that's definitely a guy who would have fine, upstanding morals when it comes to women.
I'm probably not going to check your sources. I'm probably just going to take your word on it.
There are some concerning allegations regarding a plane ride he took once.
Oh, great. I just got off a plane. Disgusting. All right, next one is from Jaren. They say, oh, by the way, I don't have a favorite wrestler. I don't think I've ever watched wrestling in my life. And I know I might get some flack for that, but I haven't, so I don't have one. And I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I do. Next one's from Jaren. They say, Ben to Snap, what card combo is just one card away from being really a really good package, aka from being the new Hood Sentry Annihilus?
Okay, so Thanos Mockingbird? No. I would say what we're currently seeing is like, you know, Corvus Glaive Proxima stuff doing that, right? I think if I had to guess, thinking about like the future cards coming out in April, maybe something bounce related. I feel like at any given point, Beast is liable to do something stupid.
Maybe War Machine, Ebony Maw, She-Hulk?
War Machine, Ebony Maw, Infinite. I mean, that's possible.
Yeah, possible. Possible. All right, Maverick, a couple of questions for next week. Number one, do you think the tournament scene is realistic with the current collection system?
No. But it's not necessarily because of the collection system. It's because there's no spectator mode. Clutch system hurts, but no spectator mode. Like we were talking about how to run a tournament earlier, me and a couple of my friends. And it's just like, okay, well, we need someone to run the stream. And then we also need someone to coordinate the TO stuff, right? So you have to have someone making sure everyone gets in their matches, right? you have to have someone running the stream on delay to somewhere else. And then you have to have the two people who are commentating commentate over the stream. And it's like, that's just kind of a lot of people that unless you can get your friends to do it for free, you're going to have to pay. And that is to say nothing of the actual prizes necessary to run a tournament at this point. I do not think that there is any way with current Marvel Snap to make that a profitable venture. And that means that it will be subsidized by people looking for name recognition, a la the Lambie Series Open with, I believe, Community Gaming, right? Like they give him the prize pool and that's how it works. So it is subsidized in that way. And that is kind of, or the Snap Fan Open, right? Snap Fan is subsidizing it for the purposes of marketing, right? And I think that's sort of a dubious value prop. And I'd be a little surprised if it ever got beyond that before Spectator Mode came out.
Yeah. Maybe Second Dinner could advertise Marvel Snap by doing that as well. But yeah, we'll see. This is a really funny one because we actually talked about this a lot prior to Battle Mode coming out, prior to tournaments being put on, like back in the old days. We're like, are they just going to ban Series 5? Like, we had that conversation. To its validity, I can't really speak, but we had that conversation a lot in the other days. Like, oh, I guess we have to ban Series 5 because it's so expensive and they were hard to get, and you had to like roll them in your shop sometimes. It was a pain. But ultimately, honestly, it didn't turn out as bad as I thought. Like, coming back and, you know, practicing or for a Snap Fan or playing a tournament, it is inconvenient to get the cards, but it's not an insurmountable hurdle. That being said, like, you do usually have to deploy some capital, which is unfortunate if you haven't been playing the game. So it is what it is, but I thought it was going to be way worse than it is, to be honest. I thought like almost no one would be able to compete in these, but yeah, it's whatever. Second question from this person is, unless a major change is made early to card acquisition or overall, do you think the game will only exhibit attrition and not growth? To semi-explain, I don't see how in another year a new player could come into the game with such a random and vast pool 3 and zero resources for pool 4/5 and want to even tackle building a collection. The game feels like it's made to beta players and whales and a lack of growth concerns me, which ties into monetization for those FTP, free-to-play gamers who help fulfill our queues.
A lack of growth also concerns me. Mm-hmm. I know Hearthstone has done a lot of stuff in terms of alleviating those barriers, right? Like, they'll just leave you, like, pre-made decks for sale and stuff like that. It's something I've kicked around a lot, but I'd imagine that, you know, the issue is, I think a lot of things that would be objectively good for the game would be rejected by a large part of the player base because they would involve making something they spent a lot of money on easy to acquire.
Yeah, that is a hilarious and absolutely accurate take. Absolutely accurate. That sucks. That just totally sucks. Yeah, because people
I think you could probably pitch Second Dinner on $50, get a deck, right? You could probably pitch them on that. Maybe it wouldn't be the perfect destroy deck. Maybe it would just like be missing, I don't know, Venom or some shit, right? Like, or Null or whatever. But $50, get a deck. You could probably pitch them on that. But then everyone who bought X23 full price is furious.
Furious. You know? The gatekeeping, that, I mean, that happens in like a lot of different aspects, but the gatekeeping there is super bizarre. It happens in like, I don't know, it happens in TCGs too, when like people, when card availability is really low or they're really expensive, like players take a lot of pride in other people not having cards and like absolutely no proxies allowed, no chance. And it's just like, why do you play this game? Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's like the most bizarre take. It's like, do you just want to play this game like by yourself with nobody? Like, it's so weird. It's like, if you add any barrier of entry to a card game, all you're doing is hurting your own experience ultimately. Super weird. Super weird.
I don't know. I'm hoping, I guess I'm hoping that by discussing it, we can like get enough groundswell around it that'll convince Second Dinner it's a good idea. But the other thing I'm thinking about is like, you know, it used to be they would make a monetization change and people would get mad about that. They'd be like, holy shit, you're letting these people get my cards for that I spent so much money on for free. What the fuck, right? And I gotta say, I think that's a good reaction to create with your changes, because it means you're doing something right. Mm-hmm. Like, if those people are mad at you, good. Good job. You did good. And I got to say, I don't think those people have been mad in a while.
Yeah.
I think it's probably about time for them to get mad.
Yeah. It's a weird logical fallacy where you're like, oh, I paid $100 for this card. Everybody else must do that as well. It can never be cheaper. It's a bummer, but it definitely would piss people off, and it would probably piss off their user base that spends the most money, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. That would be something that I'd be really interested in seeing if they could do pre-cons of some kind.
Yeah, I would love to see that as well. I mean, honestly, anything that increases the accessibility of the game, I'm 100% for. Next one is Conrad says, Ben, a staff question for next pod. Would changing Mockingbird to a 7/8 cost card be a good change to the card? She becomes a death type card for cards that don't start in the deck. If she's 8, then at least she would be 2 costs in Thanos, potentially 1 with a lucky Time Stone hit. Also, if the cost went up, would it be good to make her more powerful so that she dies to Shang-Chi? I'm a Thanos player, and I definitely love her as an addition, but I do understand how frustrating slash unhealthy she is for the game. And I understand how unhealthy it is for the game to give Thanos an easy to play 9 power card.
I think that's a terrible idea. Here's why. Thanos is currently her best home. You make that change, Thanos will still be her best home. All you will accomplish is you maybe made her unplayable everywhere else. And that sucks. I hate when they do stuff like that. It's like when they did the original collector change with Loki, where it was like, oh, we're going to make it a 2/0, right? And that way we'll make it so, and then literally only Loki can play the card now. It's like, well, if you didn't, like, they ended up having to revert that and going back to making a change that actually fixed the issue with Loki. The analogy here would be they try this, it doesn't work. They go back and say, okay, Infinity Stones don't work with it, right? Like, that's what happened with Loki and Collector. I don't want them to have to go through that same process here. No, I think that would be a terrible idea. I think, you know, you could talk me into, like, 6/11, 6/12, 6/10, right? You can talk me into those numbers if you wanted to. Everyone's going to get mad at me. But, like, I think even those numbers, you end up with very odd scar situations where it's like, I don't think I'd want to give her a point of power in that either, right? Because you end up making just, like, second Cull Obsidian a decent amount of the time, or you go, like, you know, curve her into Cull Obsidian, cheapest scar of all time kind of deal. And I think that that's something you'd really want to avoid with her. So, yeah, I don't like making her 7 or 8. You could talk me into 6, but if she goes to 6, I want her to stay at 9.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good reason. Next one's from Matthew to say, what is your go-to recipe when you have to cook, and what is your signature dish?
Yeah, it's called DoorDash.
Bro, so funny, because when I copy-paste this comment into the notes, I heard your voice say that line.
It's a very me joke to make. If I had to say one, I don't cook a lot, but I have a recipe for, I believe it's like honey mustard ginger salmon and sesame green beans that my mom gave me that I make. That would be like, if my girlfriend was like, I want us to cook dinner kind of deal, it'd be something along those lines. But I tend to be very utilitarian about my food. Like, I'm drinking a protein shake right now. I don't really go for that, right? I actually, my like personal me time treat dish, I'll just cook up an entire thing of protein pasta, and I will add spices, you know, like onion powder, salt, pepper, sesame, until it tastes like an everything bagel.
I do love me some everything bagel seasoning.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that, right? And so I was like, what if I just did that on pasta? I tried it one day and I was like, this is absolutely awesome. I really enjoy it.
That's funny, because that ties into my signature dish. My signature dish is you grab a whole avocado, you cut it open, you take out the thing in the center.
The pit?
Yes, sir. And then You cut lines into it, and then you put everything bagel seasoning on it. Then you squeeze a little bit of lemon on it, and you just eat that. That's about as fancy as I get, bro. I don't really cook either, to be honest.
The everything bagel seasoning uniting us is nice. What is your everything bagel seasoning recipe?
Oh, I buy the pre-made stuff, the one that's like organic.
Oh, and doesn't have any. I didn't even know that existed. I literally just sort of reverse engineered it.
I didn't know the other one existed. I didn't know that you could just MacGyver it yourself. I mean, obviously,
yeah,
you can,
no, but I just like I was messing with our spices one day. I was just like, wonder if I could make this taste like an everything bagel. And I could.
Yeah. Well, you can get that shit pre-packaged, ready to go, nice. Perfectly distributed. Like, it's amazing. So highly recommend. Next one is from 10. They say, what characters from Marvel Comics are you a fan of and are interested in that are not in the game, and what ability would they have?
Oh, not in the game? You think I know a single Marvel character that's not in the game? Okay, I got one for you, actually. I know Gwenpool. I know one thing about Gwenpool, and it's that she specifically requested that her Wikipedia page be updated to include the fact that she has dynamite gams as listed as one of her superpowers. And so it's currently there. And I think that rocks, so I'm going to say Gwenpool.
You came to the wrong place with this one. That's all I got to say. I got nothing for you. It's interesting because
you think you should add Kano.
I think Cam and I came from the generation that didn't get exposed to comics as much. Like, we were like 5 or 10 years behind that, and instead we got exposed to what started out, in my opinion, as good Marvel movies, and then what is now is like a terror to modern cinema. That's an opinion. If you don't agree with it, that's okay. But
take it up with Martin Scorsese.
Martin Scorsese. But yeah, so it is pretty unfortunate. I've heard like good things about, you know, comics in the 90s, and I'm sure that they're still good today, but I heard that there was like quite a scene and that they were a fun culture to be a part of, but I think I missed that.
We missed out on all the glory days of like Rob Liefeld drawing some guy who has 800 different accoutrements on him and a chest the size of my head, or three of my head, I guess. A chest the size of two of my chest would be a better way to phrase it. We missed the glory days.
Hey, it's too bad. It's too bad. I do miss the 90s. I will say that.
I don't. Are you kidding me?
I do.
You know how bad the internet was then? Never again, dude.
I do, bro. I was playing World of Warcraft on the family computer in like the middle of the house on dial-up internet. Come on.
I did not miss that.
I was gaming, bro.
Yeah, for me it was RuneScape, and I don't miss that.
Also hit a little RuneScape too. Next one is from Muggy War. They said, do you think Second Dinner will ever release variants of cards that were previously in Spotlight caches? I made the mistake of not spending extra Spotlight key to get the iconic comic book cover Thanos variant, and I regretted it every day since.
Yeah, probably. Didn't they say they were going to do that at some point?
I don't know. I just figured they would show up in Spotlight caches again at some time. They would just like recycle them. They're definitely going to recycle them. That's like just like the modern thing that these companies do. Like, yeah, I don't know. I've just seen it so many times with other card games. It also is like other digital games. They have like some sort of variant that you can get from, you know, logging in on Valentine's Day or some special thing where it's like, it was kind of cool that you were there. And then people get pissed off that they didn't get it. And ultimately they just kind of re-release it. So I'm assuming that that's just like standard practice nowadays. Next one is from the same person, but they say, two, when Snap releases clans or whatever they end up calling them, what would be your top two picks for Marvel-related clan names that you would name a clan if you made one? ?
Dynamite Gams.
Dynamite. Dude, what is that system going like that? What even?
I have no idea.
Yeah, that's like this is like this is like a mobile native thing, right? This is like a thing that happens on mobile games.
It does nothing for me.
I feel like it's like a MLM, like multi-level marketing kind of thing.
Yes,
it is, bro.
I would need to start a clan just so like the members of my clan being on the leaderboard would get me clout. Like, that's the only incentive I could think of.
I'm recruiting the five of you to get five of your friends that get five of their friends to get on top of the leaderboard. And if we have
some excellent knives for sale.
Yes, sir. I'm interested to see what they do with that, because I'm pretty sure it's like a very mobile gamey thing. And I guess Marvel Snap's audience is mobile gamers, but I think that at least Cam and I are a bit insulated against that because
we're paper boomers.
Well, we're on the card game side of it. Like, we're not
we're
on
paper
like,
boomers.
Yeah. Yeah. So clans. We'll see. Anyway, they say, as always, I love the show and your in-depth analysis on the game state and current metas. Guys, keep up the great work. And Cam, I hope to see your stream this week to collect my Twitch drops and rewards.
I hope that went well for you.
Nice. Next one is from ES. They say, what are your favorite single-player card games? Do you like roguelike deck builders such as Slay the Spire, Monster Train, and Balatro? If you haven't played Balatro, you need to.
I have never played single-player card game.
Oh.
Never. Not Inscription, not Balatro, never.
Okay. Well, let me break some down.
The last single-player card game I played was the CD that came with Magic Starter Set in 7th edition.
Is that Shalandar?
No, not Shandalar. The one that came in a box with a Thorn Elemental on the front and would teach you how to play Magic the Gathering. That is the last single-player card game I played.
All right. Let me break it down. I play a lot of card games. And I generally don't like single-player card games. It's weird. I've had to analyze this. Like, I've had to go in the hole and, like, confront the abyss. I'm like, why is this the case? And I think it's because card games are a conduit for me to beat my opponent. I think I enjoy the personal aspect, the imperfect and the perfect aspect of my opponent and their plays. Like, the dynamic, how dynamic it is. I think I enjoy that part. And when that's not the thing, I don't enjoy as much. That being said, there are some games that are cut above the rest that are excellent enough that even I can play them. And Balatro is one of them. Balatro is a great game. I would highly recommend that game. It is very addicting. It might affect your stream schedule, so maybe you should stay away from it. Other than that, I do, in my opinion, and I know this will piss some of you off, I do think that Slay the Spire is a little overrated. That's like the most sacrilegious thing I think you can say in card games right there. Cam, you got to come out. You just got to back me up and be like, Slay the Spire sucks.
I've never played it.
That's not the point. I don't know. You're my boy. You're supposed to say what?
I've never played I don't want to give my opinion on something I've never played. Come on, I'm not going to back you up on that. What if it's good? If it's good and I get clipped out of context and made to look like a fool on the internet in 5 years?
It's all good. Ride or die. I guess you're just not. I guess I died.
Yeah, yeah.
Next one is Robert Riven. They say, I enjoy watching a snapshot a lot more than playing the freaking game.
Thanks.
Honestly, I think we actually do have a legitimate non-zero amount of listeners that actually don't play anymore, but still listen to the podcast, which is...
Well, yeah, they're learning about Flesh and Blood.
Yeah, bro. Yeah, I mean, they are happy to tell us that, too. One person was like... actually, their comment was like actually in regards to feedback, but they're like, oh, but the way you talk about Flesh and Blood, I don't think that it would encourage someone to play the game. And I think it's like super fair. And they're like... Mostly because the audience doesn't know the game, right? Like if I talk about my criticisms on my Flesh and Blood podcast, then it's like, oh, they have context and they can make their own opinions. But I think the one part where it kind of missed was like, they said it wouldn't incentivize someone or it wouldn't encourage someone to Flesh and Blood. I don't think I would encourage someone to Flesh and Blood, to be honest. You would have to ask me a very specific question for me to say, play this game. And it would be, what is the like highest fidelity competitive card game that I can grind my face off and like maybe win money and like travel the world and play? That's the only criteria in which you're like, this is the game, I think, at this point.
Nice.
But yeah. Next one, Zoe. Just started listening recently. Oh man, this one's pretty funny. But I've been going back through all the old episodes, starting at 1. In episode 6, Brendan said, I'm a Thanos romantic, like want Thanos to be S tier. I just want to be playing that deck. Thanos is a card that is so unique compared to everything else in Marvel Snap because of how much deck manipulation and card draw gives you. It's so interesting. My question is, does he still agree with the sentiment or has his opinion changed? Not a real question, just the benefit of hindsight that has made some of them fun to listen to now.
Yeah, and you said no one would ever go back and clip me out of context if I said Slay the Spire sucks. Here you go, buddy.
Here's a year later. I actually do... I still do agree with that, but I think that the shells that Thanos is sort of, or like the archetypes that it's fit into so far with like the big stuff, the lockjaw, I still think the card is awesome. Like my statement about the card, I would say the same thing today, but yeah, some of his strategy has gotten a bit degenerate. I do really enjoy Thanos though. Next one is from Perplatypus. They say, I've seen both Dune movies and honestly, I don't know much about the world still. Everyone says how crazy it gets. But the movies keep it mostly tame in terms of weird stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm interested if the audiobooks are worth a listen, but the description of tripping balls in monologues does not immediately appeal to me.
Yeah, I mean, if If you're not into that, I probably wouldn't. I tend to think that, like, Dune is, look, I don't know a better way to say it. It reads old, right? Like, you read it and you can tell you are reading something that is dated, right? Mm. And that's fine, right? But if you're looking for something like that's, you know, something worth investing in or all that, like, the weirdness of Dune's world building is mostly done through, like, throwaway lines, if that yep. makes sense, right? Like, he'll just offhand mention that, like, you know, space travel is conducted via people getting so high on spice they can see into the future well enough to navigate in space. Like, that's just like a throwaway line, right? The reason Dune spoilers, the reason Paul's play at the end works in the books is because his control of spice gives him control over the Spacing Guild and what is referred to as Choam, C-H-O-A-M. I don't know how to pronounce it. I read it. Like, no one's ever said that word out loud. Fuck you. Which is like the spice distributing conglomerate, basically. And those are like the true powers in the Imperium. Like, the Empire isn't exactly the Emperor isn't exactly a figurehead, but he is to some degree beholden to the interests of space commerce, right? And those are the big companies that control it.
I think that the universe of Dune is awesome. I think that the world building is cool. I think like the different factions are really well done. Like, there's a lot that you can go down a lot of paths, and like, it's just a sweet world that Frank Herbert built. That being said, it is nowhere near the reason why I love the book. The reason why I love the book is the ball tripping per se. Like, it is really good. Like, it's I would say maybe it's a bit full of itself sometimes, and it reads a bit philosophical, but it's really well done. Like, I read Dune thinking it was going to be a fantasy book, and I was shocked. Like, I was hooked as well. Like, it's a really, really good book. It's in regards to books reading old.
It does, though, yeah. Right?
Like, the one I counted that the most with, though, was Lord of the Rings.
I feel like Lord of the Rings reads old in a more charming way.
Yeah, maybe my ADD brain can't read songs, because I would get to a song and I would just be like, bro.
It reads old like a fairy tale, you know? Like, it reads old in a different way, whereas Herbert reads old like an old man describing something to you. Like, it's a little different, I feel like.
I have to give
a lack of whimsy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that for sure, definitely a lack of whimsy. I have to give you a recommendation for the audiobook is actually pretty good. I'm pretty sure that they have an audiobook that is like has like multiple voice actors, has like sounds in the background. It's like one of those special audible ones. I recommend that. So if you're looking for the audiobook,
I'll learn how to pronounce the word Choam.
Choam. Yeah, it's funny because you said that. I've thought the same thing the entire time. Yeah. I've never spoken the word aloud. I've called it Choam. Yeah, it's been Choam for me. Choam. Yeah. All right. Next one is from Matthew. They said, what is the worst part about being a commentator for events?
That's a you question, buddy. You go first. I've done it three times.
Yeah, but you go first.
The worst part? I mean, for me, it's the travel, because the travel is unpaid. Right. And I later learned that, you know, I am aware of some commentators for whom that is not true.
Yeah.
You charge travel rate too. I didn't know that.
We should explain what that means too. So travel not being paid doesn't mean that the flights are not paid for, the hotel is not paid for. It means the time that you are traveling is not paid for. I would say that in TCGs, that is industry standard, but this is one of the delightful things about casting. You'll soon realize that not everybody gets the same deal.
Mm-hmm. this was brought up to me at some point, yes, or someone pointed out, like, hey man, you really should have asked them to pay you like 75% for that those travel days.
Yep. For me, there's a lot of things that are downsides, I guess, but there's a lot of upsides too. I would say the main one for me is that in the end, if you try to do this in like a serious capacity and you do it in a recurring way, it is political. At the end of the day, it is political, and it's not fun because of that. There's a lot of people. There's ultimately, I think casting is, in a lot of sense, a race to the bottom. Everybody thinks that they can be a caster, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think a lot of people can, and they should try it. But it is not. It leads to an unfun process of like competing to basically unsustainability for everybody that is a part of that. But ultimately, on the back end, a lot of casting and casting gigs and like who gets the gig, who doesn't, like our group or the other group, or do we get new people or no new people? It is very, very political. And yeah, it's just not fun because that's not why you're interested in casting. And it's like so far away from the card game and the broadcast. And I think that's the biggest downside. I think it's almost unavoidable too. It's not like this production company or that or this game or that game. It's just like human beings just tend to inherently be like that. Be like that. To put it eloquently, he would just be like that. But it just happens because it's sort of a, I don't know. It's like an industry where people kind of get in and then they try to secure like the gig happening over and over again. And they kind of curate that space to do that. And it just, it's not super fun. It's political at the end of the day. My least favorite part.
That sounds like someone who got out politics to me.
Yes. Yeah. The House of Cards just, you know, it tumbled on me. The Game of Thrones, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it.
He couldn't win. He got Peter Baelished.
I got Peter Baelished. I couldn't do it anymore. All right. Next one is from Torakun. They say, which option would you prefer? Option A, you get the entire Marvel Snap collection for free, but you can never unlock any variants and all borders suck at base, gray. Or B, the current status quo with all monetization strategies SD already uses.
See, this one's weird for me because I said Snap A, but my Discord voted on this and it was 2/3 B. And I don't understand.
That's a wild take.
It's fucked up. Like, I do not understand. Like, this just goes to show just how effective this marketing on bullshit is when people act like splits aren't meaningful and things looking cool aren't meaningful. Like, that's actually crazy. Because, like, people like to pretend that it's not meaningful, but it absolutely, apparently, at least, is meaningful. And meaningful to the exclusion of entire game for free. That's crazy. Like, people talk about this stuff like bundles and whatnot and credits in terms purely of progression. But I think this kind of stuff makes it at least a non-zero amount clearer to me that they cannot be understood purely in terms of progression. And understanding them in terms of customizing aesthetics is also helpful.
I like the aesthetics of Marvel Snap. I like the customization and I like the breadth of which we can choose from. That being said, if you choose option B, what the fuck? That's such a wild thing.
So weird. I was watching those that the bees pile in, and I was like, "Am I on crack? What is happening here?"
Oh god, I feel like everything we've talked about for the past year is just useless because all these people are like, "What the fuck is this?"
Yeah, dude, who gives a fuck about monetization? I need my shiny shit.
Yeah, which is artificially gay kept, by the way. It's just like, oh my god.
I can't complain. I rolled how many times on that Thanos split? 10?
Yeah.
10 different splits trying to get that guy gold. I get it.
It provides a non-zero value, but I would prefer the game to be free. All right, next one is from Savai. They say, since you started playing, what was your favorite and least favorite metagame ever?
Favorite?
Mm-hmm.
The Loki one.
Yeah, that makes sense. I kind of feel like I almost like think about you as like a Loki guy now.
I was so far ahead of everyone else in that meta, man. Fuck. least favorite? Hela. The one where it was just Hela and Thanos. There's just lockjaw shit all the time. There's just big numbers getting dumped on you. And you were just like, I guess. It's probably that one.
Yeah, it's actually harder for me to think about my least favorite. My favorite, it's a toss-up because I think I'm nostalgic for some older ones. Like, I really liked any meta where I could play Deathwave. Like, I actually liked that deck. It was fun. And I also liked the Balanced High Evo meta back in the day. But least fun is probably, I mean, it's just hard. I just worry there's a recency bias, but it's hard to disagree with like the Hela Lockjaw stuff. Like that was pretty.
Oh, it's so bad, man.
It was pretty dumpy.
It was just like, oh my god, this is such a fucking eye roll. At least the current metagame has the upside of like whatever dumb bullshit you want to play, you can probably play it. Like, there are dudes ranking up with Clog, even though it kind of sucks into Destroyer. There's dudes ranking up with Wong. Dudes ranking up with, like, there's a bunch of openings. So, like, Thanos is the best deck, but it's not the best deck in such a prohibitive, you must be this tall to ride way. So you end up in a spot where it's like, there's just kind of a lot of stuff you can do. And I think this meta is actually underratedly good.
Solid. All right, next one is from... I'm not sure if this is an L or an I. It definitely changes the name significantly because it's either Elsis or Isis.
That's definitely Isis.
Okay, it's Isis. So do you think, in quotation, taxes for not spreadsheeting is good monetization? You've discussed suboptimal key strategies and now 4U bundles are offering Series 3 cards at more cash per credit than evergreen store buttons. Is this a good way to make money without making Series 6 like cosmetics or long-term collection slow down for people who could later be lost?
I think that's by definition a good way to make money, yes. Selling people stuff for more than we would otherwise sell it to them for is probably a very good way to make money.
What about the thermal layer, man? Guess. What about the thermal layer?
Dude, I can't even see through all these layers of currency obfuscation to figure out if I'm getting ripped off or not. Are you kidding me? But yeah, no, I'd imagine it's probably a great deal. That's probably great monetization. It sure fucking gets my ass.
Yeah. Thermocline Copium.
Ask me how many 4U bundles I've bought.
How many 4U bundles have you
three. Bought? I bought three 4U bundles.
I think I've actually bought zero, but yeah.
To be fair, two of them were like $10, right? It was like $10 premium mystery variant, 1500 credits. And I like buying credits because it lets me do splits on stream.
Mm-hmm.
See? Aesthetics matter.
Yeah, who needs a free game when we could just be splitting?
Aesthetics right. matter, buddy.
Next one is from Fable. They say, what's your thoughts on the difference between Conquest and Ladder? I have success climbing Ladder, but struggle translating that to wins, an infinite, or even gold Conquest.
I think the thing is that Ladder is going to have a much more consistent band of opponents, meaning you're going to be playing against something that is much more guaranteed to be your level of play. Whereas in Conquest, it could be either too high or too low. For most top-end ladder players, Conquest is simply not worth investing the time in. It's just not a challenge. It just exists and is there for when you want to play stuff and not worry about tanking your rank.
Yeah. I think that in Conquest, you also have to play the game mode a bit. Like one of the big mistakes you can make in Conquest is in an unknown deck format, which is what, if you queue up Conquest, that's what you're doing. If you snap crazy aggressively early, like without seeing much of your opponent's deck list, without sussing out tech cards, and then you just lose like an 8-cuber off the rip for what is effectively no good reason. I think that's like a critical mistake a lot of people make, because they don't prioritize actually getting info on their opponent's deck before they start snapping a lot. So I think you got to play the game mode a bit. Last one here is from Boomer Ang. They say, who was your starter Pokemon in blue/red? My guess is Arcanpix Squirtle and Brennan with Charmander.
I was Squirtle towards the latter half of my career, I think. I want to say I was originally a Charmander, and then I was like a Squirtle gamer.
I was originally a Squirtle.
Interesting.
Interesting. Interesting.
Neither of us were picking green then. Yeah. Huh?
Who picked Venusaur?
I mean, I think if I had seen the, like, honestly, going back to it, I think Venusaur was underrated.
Okay.
I think Venusaur is a cool-ass design. And okay. I think it got a bad rap because it's the one that lost to Charizard on the type matchup.
Yeah. I wonder if blue and red just are colors that resonate with players more than green. Green's a more fringe color. Per se. I had the I had the yellow version, like the Pikachu version.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I had Pikachu as my starter.
Nice.
Yes, sir. All right. That's all of our questions for this week. We appreciate everybody submitting them. Again, we have Glenn on next week. So submit your questions below and we'll get him queued up. Very excited for that. We're revisiting Glenn after many, many months of him being on the podcast. I felt like our last podcast was fantastic. We had some amazing topics in regards to the current state of Marvel Snap, design, the future, etc. We'll be circling back on a lot of those, checking back in with him.
I'm looking at the agenda for the meeting on... next time we do this, and it's just gonna say like Thanos, every topic Thanos. We can't let him off the hook, Brendan. Yeah. We can't let him off the hook.
My favorite would be like, oh, we can't actually like ask him about the monetization. Every comment would be like monetization, monetization, monetization.
we actually probably can't. Keep in mind what Glenn's actual job is. Like, yeah, he's the cards guy. I don't really think he makes any of the monetization calls.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's the lead game designer / CEO / founder / no, I'm kidding.
/ Ben Brode. Yeah.
/ Ben Brode. Yeah. I think he's the lead game designer. Anyway, okay. If you're listening to this podcast, you enjoy it, the number one thing you can do is leave us a review on ratethispodcast.com/snapshot or Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps more than anything else. Video version of this on YouTube at youtube.com/the_snapshot. Hit that subscribe while you're there. Twitter's at Brendan APG, KMSMS. Cam is streaming in the
evenings. I streamed like midnight yesterday. It's getting real bad out here. My sleep schedule is
fantastic.
Out of whack.
That's normal. Right. Bro. That's normal, yes. If you live in Asia, I think. Like if you,
yes, I'm currently on a Singaporean sleep schedule. Something that is going over very well with my girlfriend. It's real great.
Oh, yeah. It also goes over great when you forget to upload the solo, and then, like, our editor's like, hey, is KM going to send over solo? I was like, yeah.
It's like I'm asleep until
in
4.
In 9 hours, he might get around to
it. He might be awake at 4.
Yeah, that'd be an early morning. All right.
Yeah, it's an early one.
Thank you all so much for listening. We'll see you next week.